Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
The Breath of Empty Space examines police brutality and racism. The exhibit, now at Mass MoCA, exclusively features work by Brooklyn-based artist Sean Leonardo, who uses manipulated charcoal drawings to reinterpret images of black and brown men and boys who have been victims of police violence. The drawings include representations of widely shared images showing the beating of Rodney King, the body of Michael Brown, and others. There are also drawings of Freddy Pereira, a 21-year-old killed by the police in Queens, New York, in 1991. In that case, there was no direct visual evidence of the violence, but Leonardo found a way to show it.
Because there were no eyewitnesses, or supposedly no eyewitnesses, I had to draw from the medical examiner's report, and I searched and sourced images that could explain to me what happened to this young man.
It is not meant to be comfortable viewing, and the exhibit didn't come to North Adams without controversy. It was meant to go to Cleveland's Contemporary Art Museum, but that showing was canceled after black activists and museum staff objected to the work, saying it would be traumatizing for the community. One of the activists who objected was the mother of Tamir Rice, whose image is used in the work. That experience reinvigorated Leonardo's commitment to what he sees as the necessity of his art. When we reached him, I started by asking him about the impetus for this work.
Well, the first drawing in the series actually followed nearly a year after the killing of Trayvon Martin. And I will be entirely honest with you, when I first started working with this material, it was for no one other than myself. I needed to find a way to be able to look into Trayvon's eyes without any of the media distraction, without any of the accompanying noise. I wanted to just be able to grapple with the fear that was emerging in my body, in my psyche, knowing that someone as young as Trayvon, that his life could be so easily taken away, and so much of what I had clearly buried from my own upbringing, had come surging back, particularly because it was at a time when my wife and I were considering having a child. And so I looked at Trayvon and understood that that fear would have to be transferred over to whomever I brought into this world.
So this brings up one of the things that was on my mind in looking at the images of the artwork and of the exhibit itself. The exhibit itself is this long hallway, which looks, it looks like a gauntlet, like this long gauntlet that you walk. And the images run down this gauntlet. And we often have a narrative of each one of these as an instance, the George Floyd killing, the Trayvon Martin killing, the Tamir Rice killing. But in fact, it's a story of history. These aren't moments. This is an arc of a story that not only was playing out when you did the art, but played out violently and repeatedly in the months since the exhibit went in. Does the exhibit have a different feel to you now after this summer? And do you want people to walk this gauntlet of history of violence?
Absolutely. I think that was intentional. And I would say it feels different in the moment, of course, that where we find ourselves in the ways that it feels ever more so charged and more present in our lives. But it depicts a historical legacy of this violence. And much of what you see is the ways in which it is not contained to police violence out in the streets, but that it plays out in the courts, as is conveyed in the work with the Central Park Five incident. And what I hope for is that we have to better understand the systemic reasons behind these moments, these tragedies, that they are interconnected. And what I'm asking the viewer then is to understand how they might be complacent in their looking in the ways in which it becomes a flash of emotion for some of us, but then subsides. And that to enact real social change, it requires us to look deeply and read carefully into the ways that they are interconnected. so that we understand that there are specific systems, structures that uphold violence or the ways that violence can be enacted against Black and brown bodies.
I want to move now into some of the controversy around this exhibit, The Breath of Empty Space. It's at Mass MoCA after the Contemporary Art Museum in Cleveland canceled it, after a group of local Black activists and museum staff in the city objected to the work. There are a number of issues in that. I think the thing I want to ask you about to start is, when one shows images of someone's violence and trauma, it raises questions, I think, two that I'd love to hear you reflect on. The first is, how does one have to be careful in the way of presenting those images to make sure that we're not touring someone else's trauma? And then two, how do we decide who owns those images and can use them?
And that's an absolutely incredibly important debate and valid question. And I think they are interrelated, so I will actually answer those in the opposite way than what you asked them. I would like to propose that there is a way in which, if we are asked to collectively absorb these images and the ways in which they are circulated and such so widely disseminated and then repeated in the media, that it is a collective trauma as well. And so the question of ownership, I of course, is a sensitive one. But I also like to pose alongside that it's a question of responsibility. Who's responsible to these images? And so to your first question, I'd like to make the distinction between a representation of the images as we receive them from the media and a work of art that offers a different type of opportunity of sitting with the image and processing it in such a way that one might gather more meaning and one might actually find an opening toward healing. And that's a very different proposition. And I agree, the ways in which proximity to any of these images, context around these images, our responsibility, the ways in which it is being presented and hosted, all of those things lead to a worthy debate in terms of how any of my work and any other work that deals with and works through traumatic imagery, how it should exist in the world. But my point of view is that the art should be at the center of that debate. And so the very last thing we should do is cancel out the work, because it is the work that will lead the path toward the healing. And we will not be able to find that space unless we engage the trauma directly, and unless we hold on to it, engage it, and grapple with it.
So how do you, and I understand you work with an independent curator, John Chase, how do the two of you engage with museums, which are historically white-funded, white-run, and too often made comfortable and available to white communities and not communities of color? In situating the exhibit, in engaging with community on it, I'm assuming, I believe, there must be some way that you believe that part must be done in order to ensure that people sit with the discomfort of these images in the way that you feel they must.
Absolutely. And what it requires is a real felt relationship with the individuals that make up the institution. We often forget that in these systems, these institutions, that they are made up of people. It's assessing the willingness and openness and engaging in difficult conversations, not solely as a museum, but as the individuals within the museum. And therefore, finding ways for the staff and leadership to move closer to the work. And that is as much part of what is being described as community engagement as any outreach effort. And so plotting ahead with John, the independent curator, and developing a relationship of trust is crucial in creating a space of care and accountability to Black and brown audiences, BIPOC audiences. Because if those within it are not able to see themselves and implicate their own whiteness in their seeing, then they will attempt to remove themselves from the work. And it's always been important to me that they become part of the process in engagement. And I think that is ultimately what failed in Cleveland, that they enacted a process without me, without my voice.
Why do you feel that Massmocha and North Adams are prepared to engage with and embrace this exhibit? And why are you comfortable that the experience you're seeking, that people will have it this time around?
I think it's important to acknowledge that my relationship with Massmocha has started years ago. And so it stems from that relationship. It stems from that openness and willingness to engage the work and the necessary difficulty in bringing people in with care. And so it didn't really come as so much of a surprise that they were able to step up and willing to step up in such a heartfelt way. And so the negotiation, if I'm going to call it that, actually occurred rather quickly because there was already a foundational trust there and ways in which they have been working to expand themselves out into the nearby communities and invite the tension in. And that is what this work deserves.
You said a few minutes ago, Sean, that you wanted to ensure that people would not remove themselves from the art. One of the things that is most striking to me in looking at the art is that you have removed things from the pictures. There are six pictures of Michael Brown under a shroud, but in I think it's two of them, his body's gone. In the Central Park Five, it's a court drawing, but we only see pieces of it. The Rodney King drawing is so haunting because the police, and you can see them in physical action, but the space where Rodney King would be is a white void. Why remove pieces of the moment? What is the thought there?
So it goes back to this original notion that I proposed, that there is the difference between representing the image as we once saw it and utilizing the image toward a different kind of opportunity. And I think it's in these various strategies that you're describing, which can only be really felt and seen when you're in the physical space, that implicates our looking differently. And so, for example, the Rodney King drawing is a perfect example in which we are so ingrained with the image of that beaten black body that so often we miss the fact that there were 11 officers at that scene. There's a relationship, a direct correlation between what survives in our collective consciousness and the choices by the media. And what I'm asking viewers to see is their own complacency in what they receive and what and how we remember.
My last question for you, Sean, in just a few words, what conversation would you want people to have when they leave the exhibit?
I want this exhibition, this work, to show us that we can internalize these images differently and that it can have an impact on how we conduct ourselves every day with one another. Whether that moves us toward activism or some other kind of action, what I'm saying is that there's a direct determination in the way we look and the way we act and the way we bring meaning to this history of violence. So I want people to have a moment of self-introspection, to understand where they sit today in 2020 and the change that is being called upon for all of us. And it starts by the way that we look at each other and perceive each other's identities.
That's artist Sean Leonardo. His work is now on display at Massmocha. The exhibition is called The Breath of Empty Space. Sean, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the work.
And you can see Sean Leonardo's work at Massmocha through December 22nd.